Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost hour. Tuesday afternoons, Father Thomas Loya will be our guest. That's his name, Father Thomas Loya. Thank you. Talking about theology of the body. Wants to talk about what he sees as a authentic femininity expressed, or how it should be expressed in this political cycle. So interesting. We'll talk about what that's all about and what his perception is there. And of course, as he says, through the theology of the body glasses, we'll talk about that. Also, some interesting things in the news that we'll get to. One, of course, is what is happening so far, at least in the early stages. We won't get any real findings, I guess. It's kind of how the Supreme Court works until later in the year. But we're kind of getting some inklings of what may be happening in this situation with the abortion law, which apparently is affecting Louisiana and Texas. We'll talk about that. Also, Donald Trump says it's ridiculous to compare his pledge to a Nazi sort of Hitler salute. We'll get into that. And why Bill Gates will pick up $40,000 off the street if he sees it, even though it's like a quarter to you and I. We'll talk about all of that more. Leo Brown, almost hour, back after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost hour. Once again, trying to get Father Thomas Loya connected here. Hopefully, we'll get him on the phone in a moment. Technical difficulties plaguing us once again, as can unfortunately sometimes happen. And we'll see if we get him as soon as I am capable of doing multitasking of finding phone numbers and also trying to get things worked out here. So and of course we've also made changes in the studio, which means if we would have had that number sitting in front of Bill the call screener a week ago, it would not be there today. So unfortunately, that's the way it goes. Maybe Ethan, just send Father a message asking what the best phone number is to contact him. Otherwise, I'm digging through email. It's going to be tough to get there. So when we were mentioning what we're going to talk about today, authentic femininity, and I know from the exchanges that Father and I have had, interestingly, he's kind of looking at what he sees as a reflection of Pope John Paul II's understanding of authentic femininity. And what that looks like now as we look at this political cycle, and especially, I think, as he sees what is represented in this this individual running on the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton. Now, certainly, we're not talking about who to vote for, how to vote, anything of that nature, not endorsing or de-endorsing, which I think we've been accused of before, that we, even if we may not be quote-unquote endorsing, we're certainly willing to say, well, this individual is not electable. And I think that what we do when we talk about these sensitive issues, which I know are very polarizing and emotionally charged, what we try to do is say, let's look at principles, right? Let's examine principles. Let's examine what we really need to see here from the standpoint of what makes the most sense from a faith perspective, right? And when we do that, which is rare that we do that, unfortunately, we know this, we typically make decisions not from a solid faith perspective, but oftentimes simply based on our desires, our desire for security or some false sense of security or something that may say, well, this is more valuable based on my personal ethics, you name it. It's the unfortunate reality that we face. So ideally, when we talk about these sensitive things, I want you to understand that we do it because we put our faith first. That's what it is. It has to be about what we understand as Catholics, what we have always understood about human dignity, and how these particular elements must play such an important role in the decisions we make politically. It's not about politism and Catholics. It's about Catholicism and politics. Which I find it interesting. I had the opportunity today as I was in adoration. I read through and forgive me for, I'm going to have to look up the name of this particular document because I often get it wrong. And as I was, I think we got Father. I'm going to switch gears and we're going to come back to this in just a moment. Hello, Father. Are you there?
Yes, Leo.
All right. We're going old school again this week with the phone. That's fine. Welcome in. Happy to have you. I kind of set up the stage here as far as what we're talking about with authentic femininity and kind of the challenges that maybe you see when it comes to one particular candidate or perhaps, I'll let you explain it. Take it from your perspective.
Yes, and so we've got these issues and people before us, and we need to be an informed voting public. That's part of actually the mission of the church, is to inform society, inform government, and inform voters. So we have what we call faithful citizenship. We can't say who to vote for specifically, who not to vote for specifically. However, we need to inform our consciences. And among a lot of the younger voting population, not only just the younger ones, but a certain amount of voting population, there is a kind of an attitude like, for instance, in relation to Hillary Clinton, for instance, where we need a woman as a president, so we're going to vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. Well, the problem with that is this, and I'm not saying whether to or vote for or not to vote for, but I'm trying to kind of, again, give some insight into discernment for voting, for responsible voting. The fact is, and coming from a theological perspective, because you vote for Hillary Clinton does not necessarily mean you are voting for womanhood. That womanhood is going to come into the presidency. And if voters would like to, if they're thinking of voting for Hillary because she's a woman, and many people do admit to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the question I would have then, okay, what is it that is distinctly womanly that she's bringing to the presidency that then makes you believe we should vote for her because she is a woman? See, is it just, okay, she's physically a woman, yes, but what is she, and I'm not talking about her, this is not a reference to her personally, mm-hmm. it's objectively.
Right.
What is she bringing to the table, you know, to the presidency, that you would say was distinctively woman?
Mm-hmm.
Because you must know, you must think there's something, because otherwise you wouldn't say, well, I'm going to vote for her because she's a woman, or we need a woman in the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
See, that implies that you must have some sense that a woman brings something different to that place,
right,
that particular venue. So the question, I think, for voters is to be responsible is, okay, what is it you're identifying in her that she's bringing that's different? And I think with her, there isn't anything different.
Hmm.
And one of the reasons is because she is one of those that, of course, ascribes to what has been the so-called, I'll use the term, secular feminist ideology, which basically was telling women that they don't have an intrinsic dignity. They only have a starting point of femininity that is a value, that their value comes in being as much like a man as possible. And so that's really not a feminism. It's not really not about womanhood. Mm-hmm. And so it brings up the whole question about where should women be? What is their place in society? You know, it's interesting, Leo, that in all these years of our country, in all these, and especially in these recent years of political correctness and feminism and so on, that we do not have or have not had a female president. And even when we had two who are running now, one is gone already, out of the race, Fiorina. Now we have Hillary. And even with that, we still may not have a woman in the president. We'll have a female, but will we have womanhood in the priesthood? Yeah, she's a woman, but does she bring womanhood as a distinctive gift, in distinctive characters? And this is the only reason why, if someone's going to vote for because she's a woman, they must be able to say to themselves, well, I can identify distinctive gifts that she's bringing that to the presidency that we would need, that a man doesn't have. And I don't see those gifts, and I don't think anyone can identify them. If you talk about her, most people answer that question by talking about her policies. Well, her policies have nothing to do with being a man or a woman. You know, she does sound just like Bernie Sanders a lot of things. In fact, that was just the latest thing today. What's the real difference between the two, you know? So I think it brings up a question that John Paul II addressed, too, in his document on the dignity of womanhood, on the dignity and vocation of womanhood. And he said that, as I would say, as the church would say, that, yes, woman can be in these areas of society. Yes, they can be in government and the president and lawyers and doctors and something like that. Yes, they can. But he cautions not at the cost of what is distinctly their particular gifts. That was not at the cost of their femininity. You see, what happens is, when we look at things through the theology of the body, you see that there are distinctive gifts between the two genders, two sexes, that are complementary. Men, in a sense, you could say that men build civilization. Women make culture. Like a man will build a house, a woman makes it a home. And this is where you start to get into the distinctive gifts of womanhood and manhood. That womanhood gives to society a soul, an integrity. Look in the history of womanhood in America. Where was women's strength? Where was their contribution? Well, it was in things like orphanages, in education. It was in caring for people. It was in hospital work. It was in theaters and organizations within a city that helped promote the city and the culture within a city or a town or even a country. And these are gifts that womanhood brings that are their strengths. They're rather unique to womanhood. Yes, men have them. We have parts of each other's gifts, yes. But it's a matter of where the strength lies, you know, where the greater part of that gift lies. And it is different between men and women. So whenever we say things like, well, we have to vote for a woman, Hillary, because she's a woman, I think in conscience we have to really ask ourselves, well, why? Are we really, is there any something identifiable of womanhood, of these unique gifts, and John Paul II calls them enormous gifts? Are those enormous, can those enormous gifts be identified? And is the particular candidate, in this case it's Hillary, can that particular female candidate bring that to the venue, in this case it's the presidency, and for the better? In other words, is there something missing there that only a woman can bring?
Father, we got to take a break. We're going to talk more in just a moment. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon, TaborLife.org. More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. Post things over there we talk about on the show. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith for 50 minutes every afternoon. Tuesdays, we are joined by Father Thomas Loya. Father, how are you?
Okay, Leo. You know, Leo, I just had a parishioner text me, ironically or providentially. He says, today is International Women's Day.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and yeah, March is Women's History Month. I didn't really don't know that. She just texted me now. She said, I pray for the day when true femininity, as God intended it, is celebrated and embraced once more by everyone. Mm. So that's basically my point.
Yeah.
And the post by the true femininity. This is not an anti-woman. This is a pro-woman statement.
Sure.
I'm making. And if there is something missing, maybe there is something missing. Well, there is things missing in our culture that only womanhood can bring.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the true womanhood has been submerged. Into what is a false message that, like I said before, a woman only has dignity or value to the degree that she is as much like man.
Right.
Even the only classic, thing that they kid Hillary about with her pantsuit. You know,
right, sure, yeah.
Even to that detail.
Mm-hmm.
And like one time, I was saying this to recently, and a woman responded to me. She said, Well, what do you mean? You're against her because Hillary she's driven.
Hmm.
Well, no, but I would still question that. As I always say, make it about the meaning of words. What do you mean by driven? Why does she have to be driven? Even something in that, there's room for discussion. Driven, why? Driven because she has to fight so hard to be like a man? Is that what you mean by driven? A person can be driven in a very good way,
mm-hmm.
but what does it mean today when we say that about a woman? And we're saying that as though that's a male characteristic, see?
Mm-hmm.
So why would you, right then and there, it starts to, in a sense, illustrate my point that you're already using, because you're saying that, oh, she's driven, meaning she's driven like a man. That's what you don't like, is what this girl asked me, is that you don't like she's driven, meaning as a man. Well, no, if you're saying that driven means that's a male character, you have to adopt that, There's a great, great power in other, as John Paul says right here in this document, he said, the personal resources of femininity are certainly no less than the resources of masculinity. They are merely different. Hence, a woman as well as a man must understand her fulfillment as a person, her dignity and vocation on the basis of these resources, according to the richness of the femininity which she received on the day of creation and which she inherits as an expression of the image and likeness of God that is specifically hers. So that's my point. If we need femininity in the presidency, okay, let's see it. Let's see womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could say, okay, I'm voting for her because she's a woman, not because she's a woman. She is, yeah, she's a woman, but she's bringing womanhood, which and its specific qualities to the presidency because we believe it's needed. See, that's why someone should vote for Hillary if they are,
mm-hmm.
Not just because she's a woman.
Well, I think it brings up a couple of interesting points here. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon, taperlife.org. Find out more about him there. And the one thing is that, this isn't a slam, and I think it needs to be repeated. This isn't a slam on womanhood or women or even Hillary Clinton. It's what you're saying is, if this is the reason why someone is saying, this is why I'm going to vote, then let's see why. Two things. Why does this particular office need those female characteristics, those authentic femininity elements? And if it does, where has she exhibited those in the past to say that this will be this authentic expression of femininity, which neither of those can really be substantiated here. And I think that that's what's fascinating about it.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I say that I bring this up is because I see a lot of voters, or especially younger ones, are attracted to her in that way. And again, I'm not saying I'm for or against her that way or telling people how to vote. But I think it's a very important discernment because we are talking about, the condition, the history of our country, the government of our nation, something like that. And we have to be very responsible. I think, Leo, that there's a certain irresponsible, voting is a tremendous privilege.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a car. Like you wouldn't give car keys to an 8-year-old, right?
Right.
Okay, to drive a car is a privilege, and one has to be responsible. That's why you go and get a license. you're determined, qualify to drive this. I mean, and then you're told, drive responsibly, your seatbelt, don't drink, don't text, okay? There's a constant sense that driving is a privilege and one must be responsible for that great privilege. Same thing with voting. To say just like, oh, I'm going to vote for him because she's a woman, or even that she's black, or even Bernie Sanders. 80% of the youth, 80% of the 18 to 24-year-old population, 80% claims to support Bernie Sanders for one thing. He's going to give them free tuition. That's not responsible voting.
Yeah.
Again, you can vote for him, but not for that reason. When those students get out of college and if they get a job, they'll be pretty surprised when Bernie Sanders, if he was president, takes 80%, 90% of their income out of to pay for all that free tuition and all these freebies. So it's interesting too how those who voted very strongly on a pro-life platform, they'd be excoriated and made fun of. You can't be a single issue voter.
Right, sure.
Don't you know it's singular, the economy, stupid.
Right.
For that.
Yeah.
The same thing here. Oh, I'm going to vote for her because she's a woman. That sounds just like a singular issue to me. I'm going to vote for him because, oh, I get something free. So again, the singular issue voting, they've cracked on the pro-lifers for that, and yet a lot of the voting population is doing the same thing, only a different way. So anyway, it's a matter of responsible, faithful citizenship, we call it in the church. The Catholic bishops call that. In fact, they have a wonderful document out about that, how to form your conscience. And what I'm doing right now is I'm doing my duty as a priest, as a person of the church, as a teacher, leader by virtue of ordination in the church. There is to remind, especially Catholic voters, of the mission of the church and to inform conscience. So not only what I'm saying to people right now is what I it's what I should do, it's what we must do to make this faithful what we call faithful citizenship, this well-informed conscience. The church is the conscience of the world. We inform the reasoning process. We inform the legislative process. We inform all structures and processes of society, of civilization. So not only are we well within our bounds to do so, but we must do so to be consistent with our mission. And so that's one of the issues I think that's very important for people to have proper discernment on and responsibility on is in voting, and specifically if it's going to be for someone like Hillary, because she is the woman there, so people will vote for her because she's a woman. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, and I think that when you boil it down to that could be. I mean, we saw this with Barack Obama. I know that there were those who voted for this president simply because he was an African American man, and they wanted to see history made. And there are those who, regardless of policy, regardless of any other of the elements there, would make this decision. And I think it's worth us always asking, like you say, what about this woman is womanly and or feminine, and what are those qualities and why are they good in this particular office, right? And I think if we stop and ask those questions, then hopefully that would give someone a reason to stop and say, well, I guess maybe I have never thought about that before, right? Yes. Maybe they'll have an answer. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they will, but I just cut off leading a retreat for 42 women, and of course, listening to them, hearing them, hear their confessions and all that, and it was just more and more testimony to me that, my goodness, womanhood today, they're just being churned up, they're being ground up, because they've been given, just like back in Genesis, a bad line, a bad message, that these women are trying so hard, to kick butt in a man's world, so to speak. Not that they can't be there. I'm not saying that at all. But what they're being asked to be like, to be in that world, they're paying a price for, a high price. And it's a price that's giving them a great deal of unfulfillment, a great deal of tears, a great deal of anxiety, a great deal of physical problems that women weren't that common to women before, such as there's a great increase in women having heart problems now, heart attacks and stuff like that. That was unheard of before.
Wow.
And so the whole question is, at what price do we pursue these things? And we have to admit them, that men and women are different equal in their gifts, as John Paul II said. But they're different, and we're sort of ignoring that. And that's actually, in the name of trying to champion womanhood, we're hurting womanhood. We're putting them through a meat grinders in this society, in this world. And their gifts are not really there. Yes, to some extent, but they have other gifts, okay? They have other gifts that a man doesn't have. And the problem is they're being told to ignore those gifts, though those gifts aren't significant. They're irrelevant. You know, develop your gifts that are more like a man. Well, okay, in order to do that, it's kind of like... if two people were wrestling together, one guy weighs 250 pounds, the other one weighs 100 pounds, well, that 100-pound person, to beat the 250-pound guy, would have to work very, very, very hard, right? And to the point of exhaustion or whatever, even injury. But even if they might win the match or something, still, at what cost does that person get that victory? Simply because they were trying to enter a world where their strengths weren't there. They're in other places. And not that women shouldn't be in these places. But there's the question of who is womanhood really? What are their essential gifts? And is society being denied those gifts in the name of really a more of a man-based definition of womanhood that we have today?
Well, interesting stuff. And Father Thomas Loyo, you can find out more about what you have going on over at taberlife.org. We'll talk again. Actually, 2 weeks, I'll be out of town next week, so we won't have a live show together. So I'm telling you that now, so you'll know we'll be back in 2 weeks. God bless you, Father. Thank you so much. More
Thank
to come
you.
In just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. We do that every afternoon for 50 minutes. We were talking a moment ago with Father Thomas Loya, and just to reiterate, not a slam against women, not a slam against Hillary Clinton, but I think that what Father says, again, just to kind of unpack a bit, because I think at first glance, you could say, what the heck is he talking about? He's being anti-woman, he's being anti-Hillary, whatever. And really the question simply comes down to, again, if you are voting, and it's kind of like those who would vote for any single issue, if you're voting on the single issue of, in this case especially, someone being of a particular gender, why then do they represent that? How do they represent that? What's the evidence? And what is it about this office that needs those particular gifts? I think it's a great question to ask. And I think that if that is where we're coming from on this issue, and there are those who certainly they just want to see history made with this opportunity, which would be kind of a dual history making, because we're talking about a wife of a former president and then also a first female. But if you're making that decision based strictly on that criteria, how do you back it up? And I think those are important questions to answer and something we really have to think about. So good call there from Father, challenging us when it comes to authentic femininity, which maybe one could argue the presidency needs authentic femininity. And if we have someone who exhibits that, how would they fit into that role? And so this is, it's interesting, something to really kind of dig into. Speaking of the exact opposite of femininity, that is the bravado that is Donald Trump. And he, of course, is now saying that it's ridiculous to compare his pledge to a Nazi salute. Washington Post with this article, and I have it over there for you to dig into. But it's creepy. If you've seen the video, it's at the very least creepy. You got to give him that, that he's here saying, raise your right hand and pledge allegiance to me, right? And, you know, it's defend this as you will. It's weird, right? It's weird, and it just is oddly reminiscent of, I think, what we've seen in history. And yeah, there's been a lot of comparisons here, and there are those who say, oh, you're blowing that out of proportion. That's crazy. That's not the case. What are you talking about? But we've kind of got to have a little bit of, I would hope, a little bit of objectivity here and ask the question, is this not a little bit too reminiscent, right? Are we not seeing something here that is just a little bit more than what comfort will allow? He's defending himself. We'll see where it leads. And interesting political cycles, as they always are, but in this one, I think even more interesting. You know, I discovered this just, I was talking about this earlier before we finally managed to connect with Father Thomas Loya, but I want to get back to this. And forgive me for probably butchering how to pronounce this. Centesimus Annus, I think is how you say it. Centesimus Annus. It is the 1991 encyclical letter from now Saint John Paul II. And what it was a 100th anniversary of Rerum Novarum, where he essentially revisits that document 100 years later and says, are we any better, right? Are we any better than where we were 100 years ago when it comes to labor and when it comes to capitalism? Because these were the two issues that Pope Leo XIII dug into and really began to examine from a standpoint of human dignity, from a standpoint of our faith, and primarily looking at those who were trying to say something of the nature that socialism was the answer, right? That, well, this is what we just, if we've got an imbalance of power and we've got those who are suffering as a result of that and dignity being undermined, well, then we level the playing field with a degree of socialism. And once there is nothing different between this or that, here or there, everything is equal, everything will be perfect. Well, that utopia has never materialized from any socialistic experiment. So you can't say that that's the case. And again, Pope Leo XIII affirming this in his document and also talking about the very natural law of humans being connected to the earth in the sense of property ownership, which it's a pretty fascinating document if you dig into it and you see what he was facing there with the turn of the century, very close, Industrial Revolution and full swing, and the fact that it wasn't just an American issue by any means, this global push to production, it was undoubtedly diminishing the dignity of those in very unfair working conditions. And what we were looking at from what was beginning to develop as unfortunate imbalance capitalistically. But that doesn't mean that capitalism is wrong. It doesn't mean that this free economy is not the way to go. It simply says there's a way of doing it right, right? There's a way of doing it and doing it well and doing it with tremendous dignity in place and to understand that we are talking about human ecology. And that's what I find interesting. And I posted this over on my Facebook page to no responses, but I think it's worth looking at this. I say, here's a 25-year-old document that was affirming a 100-year-old document at the time, right, which is now 125 years old. And if you read the two of these, you see that there's a continuing ethic that is presented in Laudato Si, which, of course, was simply just labeled the global warming Pope Francis document and unfortunately largely criticized and or ignored by those who simply said, well, this guy's got nothing to say to me because he's taking this political stance. Not a political stance. What we hear about human ecology, again, 25 years ago from St. John Paul II, and this document Laudato Si is exactly that. And I do know that it's interesting now after, my goodness, how long has it been out? There are those who are beginning to develop study groups around this. I know through Lent there's a number of these looking at this document. There are events with speakers and those who are digging even more interestingly into this and to try to really discover what we're talking about here. And all of this for the understanding of what may be, I would hope, what our responsibility is when it comes to human dignity, right? And it comes to an ecology that says we are creating the opportunity for individuals to flourish as in the best possible way with the resources we have. And of course, as the St. John Paul II document affirms, and I believe it's affirmed as well in Laudato Si, our most valuable resource, undoubtedly that of human resource, right? Because it's human ingenuity, it's human planning, thinking, developing, entrepreneurship, you name it, whatever, that allows for things to take shape and begin to function and begin to form, that can really begin to shape culture and provide opportunities. So we got to understand that there's a responsibility, undoubtedly, but something that without the very nature of humanity, we would not be able to maintain. So interesting stuff. Again, if you want to take a look at that, it's over on my Facebook page. But three documents that really should be read together and looked at in light of one another. I think it's a beautiful thing to see. The Supreme Court kind of maybe given us a little bit of nod of what may be coming now with the court being in its interesting imbalance as it is with the swing voter, Justice Kennedy, who would normally kind of be a deciding factor, may be either a tipping point or perhaps a tie on the court on this abortion legislation that was proposed in Texas, actually enacted in Texas, challenged, and that's why we see it going to the Supreme Court now. But this is still a little bit too soon to tell because we never really know where it's going to go until we hear those actual decisions handed down later on in the year. But oftentimes we kind of get a whiff of this, right? About this time every year, whatever the Supreme Court is examining, hearing, and about to decide on, there's some early indications of what that looks like. And right now, it very well could be that all of this legislation is dismantled because we simply apparently can't hold the abortion business to the same standards as the medical business. And that's kind of where the liberal side of the court seems to be falling on this. And this, of course, is an unfortunate reality that there are many who really simply, as we've said many times, the safe and the rare of the trifecta mantra, safe, legal, rare, two of those don't matter at all. There is absolutely no concern. The only thing that's a concern is that this remains legal. And we're kind of seeing that play out now on the Supreme Court. And without a balance on the court, it's very likely we're going to see decisions handed down mid-year that simply say, too bad about this legislative process in these particular states. It's unconstitutional. We'll watch and see. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much. Again, follow me over here on Facebook, Leo C. Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Thanks for listening. God bless you.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.